guys.
This meeting is now being recorded.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the RDS Who Is One Recommendation Number 10 Privacy Proxy Service Subgroup Meeting Number 2. The call is taking place on March 20th, 2018 at 1500 UTC. And in attendance is Catherine Bauerbull, Jennifer Gore, Susan Kawaguchi, Owen from ICANN.org, as well as Steve ICANN.org, and Lisa Pfeiffer, Brenda Brewer, and I will connect Alice and Jean-Baptiste as soon as possible. Again, the call is being recorded. State your name for the transcript, and I'll turn the meeting over to Lisa. Thank you.
Thanks, Brenda. And this is Lisa Pfeiffer for the record. And believe that the reason for our meeting today was actually to convene a briefing on the privacy proxy subgroup questions that had been forwarded to subject matter experts. So why don't I turn things over to Jennifer? I guess that would be you to lead us through the answers that you may have prepared to the questions raised by the subgroup.
Thank you. And honestly, I'm gonna defer you over to Amy Bivens. She's responsible for the project and was the one who coordinated and answered the questions. So Amy, if you would take it over.
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Amy Bivens from ICANN.org, and I have a list of questions here from you that we can go through because I'm the staff member responsible for leading the implementation. I answered most of the questions, but for some of them, I'll be looking to Owen and Jen and others for more detailed information. If you guys have questions at any point, please feel free to stop me so it's not just me talking the whole call because nobody likes that, especially me. Does anybody have questions in general before we just get started with the questions list? Okay, hearing no hands. Please, feel free to interrupt me. It's sort of awkward running the calls without an Adobe room where you can see hands, but please feel free to speak up. Okay, so the first question that we received from the review team was to identify challenges that we identified with the implementation. And I believe most of you are fairly familiar with this implementation, so you can probably identify challenges as well. But from the point of view of running the implementation, I think probably the most significant challenge has been gaps in the final recommendations. Specifically, the final report had a whole process in place for recommendations for providers to respond to intellectual property requests, but there weren't similar processes or recommendations in place for law enforcement requests. So that's something that we had to create from scratch. And it also raised some questions among certain members of the IRT about whether we were dipping into the realm of policy versus implementation. And it would have been easier to implement if we had more specific guidance in the recommendations on that topic. Another area where it was challenging or has been challenging is that the ecosystem has different types of providers. So there are privacy proxy providers that are affiliated with registrars and providers that are not, at least hypothetically, providers that are not affiliated with registrars. And we were instructed to create a program that takes them into account. But we haven't been able to identify specifically one of those providers to participate and think about how the requirements will impact them. And so it's been a bit of a challenge to try to take those interests into account when we haven't found one of those providers. The other major challenge, I think, is just related to time, which is similar to, I'm sure, all other implementations that are going on and policy development processes. We have a lot to implement for this program, and there's pressure, or especially at the beginning, there was time pressure to get it moving quickly and to try to get this finished in a short period of time, which requires a lot of work and a lot to ask of the community volunteers and also on the staff side trying to make it all work in a shorter period of time. We haven't quite match the original time frame that was requested. We had been requested to try to do this within a year. It's been about a year and a half now, and we're getting closer to the public comment period, but we still have a ways to go. So time is challenging, and people are tired, I think, especially community members. Does anyone have questions on that topic before we move on to the next question?
Hi, Amy. This is Susan Talzucci. I do have a question, and thank you for all the hard work. You know, I've been in and out of this IRT, but you keep moving it on, so we really appreciate that. So on the question of different type of providers, I know there's been pushback when, you know, there was only one identified, you know, category, not being connected to registrars. And you say you haven't had anybody participate from a proxy provider that is unaffiliated with a registrar. Is that different than not being able to identify them? I mean, does ICANN know of any providers that are not affiliated with a registrar?
Thanks, Susan. This is Amy for the recording, and this is one where I may reach out to Owen and Jen as well for additional information. But really, as far as we can tell, we're aware that there may be some providers that may be acting like a reseller, potentially, and I think Owen came across one that he thought might fall into the category of unaffiliated. So we think they are out there, but they seem to be in the supply chain somehow, so if they're not affiliated with the registrar, they're a reseller. Trying to find one that's completely separate has been a challenging task, and I don't think we know of one. Owen,
I'll jump in because I've reached out to several in the community on this. It has been difficult to find a 100% completely unaffiliated provider. A lot of the ones that were referred our way when we requested it were actually affiliated with the registrar in some fashion. As Amy pointed out, there are ones that are associated with resellers, which may not be technically affiliated, but may be through the operation of how they are because they are connected to a registrar. As a reseller, officially, they already have to comply with the obligations. There was one that we did come across with. It's called Injala. I'll have to go back and get the spelling of that. And that appears to be a 100% unaffiliated proxy privacy provider. It's still not exactly clear what it is or how it does it. If you're interested, the domain name for it is N as in Nancy, J as in James, A as in Apple, L as in Lisa, dot L-A, as in Louse, the CCTLD.
Oh, okay.
So that's the only one that we've been aware of, and that was only came to our attention within the last, I don't know, 6-9 months or so.
So I know back in the PvP, part of the argument was people were pointing at law firms that often will register in their name for their clients. So that's not the type of proxy service or provider that you're looking at then.
This is Owen again. There are a number of scenarios that come up with this type of example, which we often see, web developers.
The host has left the meeting to speak with meeting support and will rejoin soon.
I can keep going, I hope. Okay.
We can still.
So I know, law firms is one scenario, whether they're actually providing those services or web developers or resellers sometimes put themselves in the who is, as that. So, yeah, I don't know if that was something more that was considered by the working group. Maybe Amy can answer to that.
Owen, and this is Amy again. And the issue of attorneys specifically is a tricky one. Susan, I don't remember if you were on the PDP working group or not, but it's sort of tricky because the PDP working group kind of danced around the issues of attorneys and whether they would qualify as privacy or proxy, and it was sort of decided by the PDP working group to just not touch that issue, which has been kind of tricky in the implementation process, because if you look at the definition of privacy and proxy and you look at what attorneys do, I think at least arguably, or I mean even beyond arguably, you would think that they would fall under the definition, but the PDP working group sort of shied away from addressing that issue, and so that's been kind of tricky in implementation because we don't want to go to them and, you know, try to discuss the issue about law firms or try to go to law firms unless they're explicitly offering their services of proxy or privacy service.
Okay, that's helpful. And I was on the PDP, and I was the one that didn't think we should include attorneys because attorneys have other obligations that they're covered by. So I didn't feel like that was a true proxy provider situation. But that's my personal stance on that. So. All right. That was my only question so far.
Okay. Thank you. Does anyone else have comments or questions on the challenges point before we move on to the next one? Okay. So hearing no one, the next question was, what internal systems will this implementation impact? And this is kind of a broad question, I think, because I think the implementation ultimately will impact pretty much all of the systems that we're using today for contracted parties. For example, we'll be using the systems for finance, we'll be using the systems for compliance, we'll be using a system to manage the privacy proxy provider account data. And while we won't be creating a completely new system or systems specifically for privacy proxy will be included in the development work for that we're currently doing for registry operators and registrars. So the portal and things like that, we'll also be using that for privacy proxy. Do you want to talk specifically about compliance systems?
Sure. The only thing in terms of from a compliance perspective that we'll need to do is updates to the existing complaint processing system. And the metrics data mart, where a lot of the metrics that are on ICANN.org would be are generated from. So that would impact new complaints that might arise from any eventual PPAA, as well as impacts to existing complaint types. We have transfer, domain renewal, who is an accuracy, and others may all be touched by whatever comes out of the final PPAA. Also need to include, like I said, metrics for that. And then content that we have on ICANN.org, we need updates to coincide with the effective dates. But we don't foresee any type of new systems that would need to be created. It would just be tweaks and modifications to existing systems.
Thanks, Owen. This is Amy. And I'll also add that, and for those of you that aren't familiar with the work on the portal that's being developed for registry operators and registrars, and this comment specifically is completely in my personal capacity because I'm not working on that at all, really. But I think one of the challenges that we have is that the portal is coming along and it's being developed, but it may not be ready at the point when we are launching this program. So it's possible that we may have to come up with some sort of stopgap in between that to manage the provider data. But I think Jen can probably speak more to that because I know you're really involved in the portal work.
Yes, absolutely. So we'll be launching the portal actually next week for the registrars, version 1.0. And we do have on our roadmap to include privacy proxy providers, in which we'll probably support them in the coming 9 to 12 months, depending upon the next phase of our roadmap. And what I mean by that is if they're a registry or a registrar today, there also will be an option for them to switch their profile over in the portal as a privacy proxy provider. It'll be one of three profiles, meaning registry, registrar, privacy proxy provider, in which they'll be able to manage their day-to-day interactions with ICANN, view their ticket, their compliance ticket, respond to the compliance ticket, modify or update their contact information, receive announcements through the portal. Basic day-to-day operations information will be able to be retrieved from the portal for these contracted party types.
Thanks, Jen. This is Amy. Oh, sorry.
This is Susan. I'm going to ask a dumb question, but so PPAA is Privacy Proxy Accreditation, but what's the second
agreement?
Agreement. Okay.
The host has left the meeting to speak with meeting support and will rejoin soon.
Sorry, we're all really missing it.
We shouldn't continue to throw these acronyms at you. Apologize for that. Privacy Proxy Accreditation Agreement.
And this is Owen. I apologize for dropping out there. I was the one who did that, so I should have explained that. But I promise to explain other acronyms if I so need to do so during this call.
No problem. I knew I should be able to figure it out, but it was obvious that it wasn't. My brain was not picking it up this morning, so thank you.
All right, so this is Amy. Does anybody else have questions about that topic related to systems before we go to the next question? Okay.
Hi, everyone. Sorry, I was struggling with the mute button. I actually have a question about something that Susan raised before, and sorry I didn't jump in time. So the issue of unaffiliated privacy proxy services, I mean, one question that raises is if you are affiliated with a registrar, of course, you're subject also to the RAA specs and everything that comes with that. So in terms of implementing the separate PPAA, has there been any thought given to whether there's obligations under the RAA that would need to be included in the PPAA for those privacy proxy services that are not affiliated with a registrar and thus not already subject to those RAA specs?
Sure, thanks.
Amy?
Oh, sorry.
I'm going to say you're the expert. The short answer I was going to say is yes, but I'll defer to Amy on that one.
Yeah, and Jen's right. The short answer to that is yes. There certainly are obviously, you have to consider that privacy proxy providers don't provide identical services to registrars. So there are certainly all the obligations of a registrar wouldn't fall onto a privacy proxy provider, but there are many that do. For example, in the final recommendations, there weren't explicit recommendations that would have required data retention or data escrow. However, given that providers are required per the final recommendations to provide customer information, it seems logically to flow from that they would need to retain that information for a period of time so they would have the information to provide. And so we went through that general exercise in drafting the first draft of the accreditation agreement by just looking through the RAA and thinking about what would need to be also included in the privacy proxy agreement. So when you look at the privacy proxy agreement, it looks a lot like the RAA. The section numbers are a little bit off, but if you look at it's very similar to the RAA with the additional requirements that came from the final recommendations from the PDP working group.
Okay, thank you.
And also, if you want to see a copy of the agreement, I can send it to the whole review team if that's helpful to you, if you guys are interested.
That would be a good idea. Thank you for that.
Okay, I'll pass it along. Okay, so our next question was whether there's budget allocated for this implementation, and Jen is my boss. She can probably answer the budget question better than me, but the short answer is yes. We have current budget now. Up until this point, the budget, we've been using existing staff, and we haven't done a whole lot of development work yet, and so there have been costs related to working with the IRT and drafting the agreement. But going forward, we certainly have budget allocated for getting the systems in place and the processes in place that'll be needed to support the program. Jen or Owen, did you want to add anything to that?
I'd like to, Amy, if you wouldn't mind, and then I'll defer to Owen. So as part of the cost analysis, we've worked with each of the departments based on a forecast that we received from the IRT to determine what additional resources would be needed, not only hard resources but soft resources, whether it's humans or additional licensing, and went across each of the organizations to figure out what those costs were, and formulated those costs, and then, of course, lined activities based upon the phase of the life cycle for the privacy proxy accreditation provider into that analysis as well. We presented a top line of that to the IRT in Puerto Rico in order to explain to them the fee schedule that was also presented to them in previous weeks. There were some additional questions that came out of that. We're working with our finance team to answer those questions, specifically to Volcker. And so our plan is to continue to make sure that we've addressed those questions. But at this point in time, we've allocated the cost accordingly, and we'll be incorporating that as a separate line item in our FY19 budget.
Well, this is Owen. Just wanted to reflect what Jennifer said. Currently, what Contractual Compliance is doing is through our existing resources. We've participated in the budgeting forecast exercise to ensure that the additional activities would be covered in the budget. And for the most part, that is things we have for outside vendor costs, either for creation of an audit program using the outside auditor that we contract with, or the service providers that we utilize for development of the complaint processing system.
Thanks, Owen. This is Amy. Does anyone have questions about the budget topic before we move on to the next one? Okay. So the second or the next question is related to the previous one. It asked, what impact will the implementation have on existing providers from a cost impact perspective? So the impact is that there will be, or we're proposing to have an application and also an annual accreditation fee. So there will be that impact on existing providers. The proposed fees, they're fairly similar to the registrar program fees. We're proposing a $3,500 application fee for new providers, $2,000 for existing accredited entities, and then a $4,000 annual accreditation fee. There'll also be probably costs on providers to update their systems to comply with the new requirements. There'll be requirements related to relay of communications, reveal of customers in certain situations. They'll be updating probably their terms of service and things like that. In terms of the impact, we've done the best we can, I think, to try to minimize the impact, especially for providers that are affiliated with registrars, and to try to streamline the requirements with the registrar requirements to minimize the amount of work that they'll need to do, or the expenses that they'll need to incur to get on board with the program. Do you guys have questions about that? I think this question may have come from Volcker, and if he has additional questions, we can certainly answer them when he's available.
So this is Susan. Have the registrars estimated what it might, beyond the accreditation fee, might cost them to implement this?
Susan, this is Amy. We have not heard that estimate from them. Jen, unless you may have heard it anecdotally from them, but we haven't got anything official.
We haven't got anything official, and I essentially think that most of the registrars that are participating on the IRT already offer a privacy or a proxy service today. So their systems currently support it. The additional cost for them would come around the data escrow and some of the auditing and reporting requirements that are in the agreement.
Okay, that's interesting. So you don't. So in my experience, is like 10% of current proxy privacy providers actually provide, will reveal information. So I would think they might be having to add to their systems to respond to requests for information. But if they haven't said anything, then, I mean, I wouldn't have any idea how much that would be. So.
Yeah, they haven't. Honestly, they haven't said anything. I'm surprised at this point that they haven't. I think that they have communicated in their own, you know, head how much costs, and, you know, we're hearing about that when things like reporting or data escrow come up or auditing, when they start asking questions related to that, then they're calculating the additional cost on their end.
Okay, that's interesting. All right. Thank you.
All right. This is Amy again. Does anybody else have questions about cost or budget? Okay. So our next question is there any part of the implementation that will require new technology? And I'm not sure if the question is related or if it's directed to the ICANN side or to the provider side, probably potentially both. On the ICANN side, we won't be having any new systems or technology directly or that's just for this program, as I mentioned, but we are in the process as the broader organization of improving our systems, and we'll be getting providers onto those new systems. Also, at least under the proposed requirements, we're proposing to have the providers use the reporting interface that the registry operators use. And this is a new technology, it's not completely new technology, but it's technology that hasn't been used by registrars before. So that will be new to them. Does anybody else have comments on this or questions?
Hi, this is Catherine. I have to apologize for my ignorance, but I'm just wondering, this is triggered by something we discussed earlier about the reveal information. There are no plans to have one sort of set protocol for how the information on the actual registrant that is held by the privacy proxy service needs to be held and revealed from a technical perspective. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So everybody, this is Catherine, and everybody's free to sort of do as they please. And then if they do receive requests, they respond in whatever format they use for their own purposes.
Yes, that's correct, Catherine. Under the current requirements, there aren't any sort of technical limitations or specifications on how the reveal has to happen.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone else have questions on this or comments? Okay. So our next question is, will this require modification of the RAA? And thankfully, the answer is no. We won't have to go through the amendment process for the RAA or make any modifications to the RAA itself. There is a requirement in the RAA that registrars comply with any new policy requirements related to privacy proxy. And also, the RAA has the consensus and temporary policy specification, which provides that any new policy requirements that come out after the RAA went into effect, the policy requirements would supersede anything contrary in the RAA. So there will be some new requirements related to privacy proxy that registrars will have to follow, but they'll be implemented via the policy instead of having to amend the RAA. Does anyone have questions about that? I will add that there is an interim specification for privacy proxy in the RAA, and that will expire. is currently set to expire in July of 2019, I believe. So hopefully we will be fully implemented by then. If not, we may need to extend it again. But at that point, it will expire at whatever point it expires.
This is Owen. I just wanted to echo what Amy said about the temporary privacy proxy specification. It was originally set to expire on January 1, 2017, and it's been extended. This is the second extension, so that wouldn't be a concern if we had to extend it longer, if we can't make that the July 1, 2019 date.
Thanks, Owen. Does anyone have questions about this one? Okay, so the next question is for Owen. So I will send that to you. The question is, what plans does the compliance team have for ensuring compliance?
Thanks, Amy. This is Owen for the record. So similar to the prior readiness efforts that the compliance team completed for the launch of the new GTLD program in the 2013 RAA launch, there's a number of steps that we need to do to ensure compliance with the TPAA and related policies. So first is we have to define and document the process for new privacy proxy complaints, as well as what the impact would be on existing complaints. This would include updates to communication templates, forms that will go on ICANN.org, staff training, and documentation. A second component would be need to define and document a privacy proxy provider audit program. We have a couple staff who do that, as well as a vendor that we utilize for review of documents. So that whole program and testing would need to be set up. The third main area we have to do is to define, document, and prepare metrics and reports that will go on ICANN.org and elsewhere relating to the privacy proxy compliance and audit programs so that there's feedback and information for the community. And then as the program starts to ramp up, one part of the process for accreditation, this is for registrars and registries as well. This is a new task, is conduct compliance checks of existing contracted parties to support the accreditation process. If an affiliated entity has some compliance concerns, that can delay the accreditation process for an affiliate or related entity. There may be also some community outreach that compliance will have to participate in regarding privacy proxy provider compliance with the requirements. And then ongoing costs that we would see is we would still have to do the compliance checks as the program goes. There's an initial launch phase, but then as it's ongoing, we would have to be doing more of those checks, processing complaints regarding privacy proxy providers. And that includes going through our informal resolution process and any types of breach or enforcement processes as well. We have to conduct audits of the privacy proxy provider and generate performance metrics relating to the privacy proxy areas. So that's just overall what we've identified as the steps for compliance to ensure compliance with any resulting accreditation agreement or policy. And if you have any questions about that, please do let me know.
This is Susan Kazuchi. Owen, could you expand a little bit on the conduct compliance checks of affiliated entities? I wasn't quite sure what that meant.
Okay, sure. Sure. This is Owen again. So as part of the accreditation process, and what I'm referring to is not something that would be limited to just privacy proxy providers. This is any type of accreditation that ICANN does for a new contracted party, registrar, and registry operator. Part of that process, they have goes through GDD, where they have to fill out an application and do the background check and all those other things. As part of that, GDD asks compliance to do a check on any things that are affiliated with that. So there's a registrar family, a registrar group of, say, 50 registrars, and they're getting another accreditation. We run a compliance check against the other members of the family to ensure that there are no concerns from a compliance perspective, which is generally if there's a breach or a likely breach there. It's also checked with other areas. I think part of it is, are there any past due fees, significant past due fees that might do that? So that's something that would that happens currently with any registrar or registry operator that signs an agreement with ICANN, and that would be extended to the privacy proxy provider program. And what we would, because a lot of these will be privacy proxy providers that are affiliated with registrars, we'll need to go through and ensure that the privacy proxy providers aren't being accredited when they have affiliated entities that might have some compliance concerns. Does that answer your question, Susan?
Yeah, that does. That makes more sense. I wasn't quite getting it. And just sort of, and in general, I'm taking notes, but I was wondering if these answers will be provided in writing to the subgroup.
Yes, I actually do have a draft here that we had done. We're also intending to publish it on ICANN.org because there's also a metrics request from the RDS who has two regarding privacy proxy providers that we have some additional information. So we're planning to publish all of this on ICANN.org, but can also provide it to the subgroup as well in advance.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Hi, Susan, and this is Amy. And if the subgroup would like answers to all the other questions, we can certainly provide those as well, the non-compliance ones. I have just some shorthand answers, and I would certainly write them a little bit better than they're written now. But if you'd like them, I can turn them around and I guess by tomorrow.
That would be really helpful. I don't want to burn you all with a lot of work, but it's especially since Volker's. I don't know that Volker has joined the call, and he's actually heading up this subgroup, so I think that would be beneficial for him too.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I can do it by tomorrow. It's just my answers are not incomplete sentences. They were just for me, so I could just update it so it's suitable for sharing. Okay, so our next question is, how long do you estimate it will take the question before that, Owen, did you cover what's the expected budget impact for ongoing operations for compliance work? I don't think you did.
Oh, yes, I think this is Owen. So I didn't, I guess there were a couple of drafts of the questions that were circulating. So I don't have those specific numbers in front of me, but currently there is nothing budgeted in terms of additional staff. The only additional costs that we've had are outside vendor costs, such as systems development and for the outside auditor that ICANN leverages which would be used for the privacy proxy provider audits.
Thanks, Owen. Does anyone have questions about that one?
I do. I'm sorry. I keep asking questions. This is Susan for the record. And who would that outside vendor be on the compliance side?
This is Owen. For which aspect, Susan?
I think you mentioned web development and something else, and I didn't catch the second.
Oh, sure. This is Owen again. Contractual compliance has been utilizing the vendor, the acronym is 3SI2. They've been engaged for development of the complaint processing system that we've been using for the past, since before my arrival at ICANN, they were being used. I'm just celebrating 6 years at ICANN. That vendor is one we've engaged. I'm not sure the exact timing, whether the modification, I refer to complaint processing system as whatever system we happen to be using. This is coinciding with the move to the naming services portal, NSP. So whether it's updates to our current system or updates to NSP, those are anticipated that there will either be the vendor we currently use or some other vendor that's working with ICANN as needed for NSP. With regards to the audit, Contractual Compliance currently uses KPMG as our audit partner, and so we're able to leverage a lot of the language resources because we get documents. I don't recall exactly from the last audit, but it may have been 20, 30 different languages that ICANN doesn't support, and they're able to provide those review and translation services.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
But again, these aren't new vendors or anything that would be identifying. They're ones that we have long-term existing relationships with.
Okay, so this is Amy again, and the next question is, how long do you estimate it will take for the implementation? What's the estimated remaining timeline for the implementation? And that is a very excellent question that depends a lot on the IRT's work and discussions and what happens during the public comment period. So for those of you who have been following the IRT, you know we're very close to going to public comment. There's one major issue that we're still working through, and we're hoping to figure out over the next couple of weeks whether we can reach resolution on that issue or not, the law enforcement authority framework. After that issue is resolved, we are planning to publish for public comment. We're hoping to be able to publish for public comment in April, hopefully the first half of April. If that is the case, then we would be open for public comment for at least 40 days, potentially longer since it's a relatively big packet of documents that we're going to be asking the community to review. So the public comment period, if it opened in the middle of April, we'd be open through at least the end of May, maybe a little longer than that. And then after that, we'll need to go through the public comments to determine whether we need to make any changes. If the feedback was great in the public comment period and there's no need for any changes, which probably isn't likely but could happen, I guess best case scenario and timing, we could be ready to announce the final requirements later this summer, at least summer in the Northern Hemisphere, so maybe August-ish, which would be good because it would fit into the timeline that we try to follow for announcing requirements, which is August and February. We try to follow a six-month cycle. Regardless of when we announce the requirements, after that there'll be a period of time before the requirements go into effect. We'll have to have time to process applications from providers and to evaluate providers' qualifications to become accredited. And we'll also have to give providers and registrars time to ramp up and do, you know, the development work they need to do to comply with the requirements. So if we were to announce in August, we would probably begin accepting applications potentially, like, before the end of the year, but late in the year, so like November, December. And we would probably, on that time frame, the compliance team would probably begin enforcing the requirements around the middle of the following year. But this is all still very much in flux depending on what happens during the public comment period and with the IRT. Is that helpful?
Yes, Amy, that is. This is Susan.
Okay. And at this point, your guess is probably as good as ours in terms of what will happen in the public comment period, but that's the goal, hopefully, to get the final requirements out closer to the middle of this year than the end, but we'll see how that goes.
Owen, just want to mention version of the PPAA, and there's no more changes, then we're going to get moving internally to get all of those things that I described earlier in place and ready to go. We can start doing some of that earlier, depending upon you know, what settled areas there are in there. But we'll certainly be ready well before the, or hopefully should be ready to go before the effective date of the policy and the accreditation agreement.
Thanks, Owen. Does anyone else have questions about timeline? Okay, so we have some questions specifically related to the RAA specification, and these are compliance-related questions. The first question was, please provide information on the volume and content of compliance reports, I think it's supposed to be reports, regarding the privacy proxy RAA specification.
Okay, let me just grab that information here. So yeah, this is something I wasn't aware that I was going to come up during this call. I have, we actually have a nice document on this. I know we've got a limited time left on the call. You know, we've gone through and answered the different questions here, including metrics since 2014 for this. So I don't know if what would be the better route to go is just give a quick summary now and then share it with the subgroup.
That sounds good.
Okay. So since the, again, this is Owen again, since the effective date of the privacy proxy specification on January 1, 2014, contractual compliance has received a total of 288 complaints. Of those 288, 207 were out of scope. That either means somebody is complaining about something outside of the privacy proxy specification, or they're complaining we didn't receive information to validate their complaint. Of the ones that we received, 81 of them were forwarded to registrars because they were within scope, and there has been no enforcement action, such as a notice of breach, regarding any of those.
Of the, Susan Calvucci again. Of the 81, were those resolved, or?
This is Owen. Yes, they, because none of them went to enforcement, all of these complaints would go through the standard compliance 1-2-3 notice process, and if there was nothing, if it was not resolved by the deadline for the third notice, it would have gone to enforcement and notice of breach. Since there were no breaches, all of them were resolved within the informal resolution, the 1-2-3 notice process.
Okay, and then what's your definition of resolve?
Resolve, that's where some of the things here. So some of the questions, you know, taken or actions taken by registrars to resolve complaints would be adding or confirming the location of required web posting obligations. Demonstrating that the registrar abides by the terms that they've published and the procedures, or ensuring that the privacy proxy entity is properly identified in the public who is. Some other things out there, such as ensuring that the data escrow deposit includes not only the public who is information, but also the underlying customer information with the data escrow deposits they make. So those are some of the samples, some of the actions that have been taken to resolve those complaints.
So at this time, actually revealing the information would not be a requirement, correct?
This is Owen again. There is no obligation in the current privacy specification that that there is a reveal. There does have to be explanation or procedures of how this reveal would happen. And so if there's a complaint regarding that, it would be, you know, they did not reveal, there would be probably a follow-up with the registrar to request what the reveal policy is, what steps were taken to determine whether or not to reveal, how that was done. And in any of the cases that have come up, they have been consistent with the policies that the registrar or the privacy proxy provider have posted online.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you for the additional details.
All right. This is Amy. So if no one has any further questions at this point, we can send around written answers to your questions, hopefully by tomorrow. And if you have further questions, you can always send them to us. We can answer them at any point.
Yes, hi, this is Catherine. Sorry, I'm a bit slow, also with the mute button. But I was just wondering, on the complaints, the 207 that were out of scope, so none of those was related to reveal issues, right? Because if I understood you correctly, Owen, you were saying that at least if there were any issues with the reveal, there would be a check as to whether the reveal refusal or permission was in line with the service's own policy. Is that correct? Or were any of the ones that were out of scope related to reveals?
This is Owen. So I can't give you that level of granularity. The complaint processing system does not have that amount of metrics coded into it, whether we can subclassify complaints. This was based upon, I went back and looked at those various complaints. I've been the subject matter expert since the 2013 REA has come into place for privacy proxy for compliance. So it's based upon my own observations and experiences as well as a review of a data dump. So it doesn't include a review of every single complaint that's come through. But I have seen reveal complaints where somebody will complain that privacy proxy provider X would not reveal based upon, you know, whatever. And generally during those types of follow-ups, it would be found that whatever steps came that the registrar or privacy proxy provider did comply with whatever policy they had done. Quite often out of scope things is there's a lot of reporter, we have to do a lot of level setting of expectations with people who file complaints with contractual compliance. A lot of it is they expect that ICANN can do whatever it is that they're asking in the complaint, which is a struggle because quite often we can't do what they want. So some of the things that we would see out of scope complaints would be they filed a complaint with us, we asked for more information to validate the complaint, and they did not provide that to us. We don't have enough information to proceed, so that was considered out of scope. Sometimes it would be a third-party dispute. For example, this is a website that is publishing lies about me. You need to give me the website. And it was a privacy proxy issue. That's not really within the scope of the privacy proxy specification. And then others could be customer service issues. My registrar charged me $20 to use privacy proxy services, but they, you know, didn't tell me ahead of time. You know, that may or may not be something that would fall necessarily within the scope of the existing privacy proxy specification.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thanks everyone. This is Amy. So we'll send around the answers to the questions as soon as we can. And if you have further questions, just send them our way. Thank you.
For all the information. We really appreciate it.
Sure. And any time, seriously, if you have further questions, just send them.
Okay. Will do. Thanks, all.
Bye.
Bye.
Have a good rest of your day. Bye.